Okay, we're starting here in the two dots on the top of Samach Dalet Amud Aleph. Gemara here is going back to investigate the statement that was made yesterday, which is the last piece, which is Musaf Sakala Beged Shetamei Mishum Agri, that the sack has this over a Beged, which is that it's Tamei Mishum Agri for weaving. Gemara asks the very basic question, which is Otu Beged Lavariku. Isn't that the way you make a piece of clothing? A piece of clothing is woven. So Hachi Kamar, this is what it means. Musaf Sak Ala Beged Afo Pi She'eno Arig Tamei. The exact opposite of what you would thought it means, which is that the sack has more than the beged, that is that even when it's not woven, it is tamei. The way Rashi formulates it is, it's tamei because of a rig, even though it's not a rig. And the Gemara will explain this in 1 second. So even though it's not woven, it has a din like it is woven. This is what we're talking about is a sack. And as Rashi explains, that a sack is made out of notzash elizim, made out of the hair of the goats. So as opposed to beged, which would be made out of wool or linen, something that uses thread and is woven and stitched. Here we're talking about the hair of a goat. But the hair of the goat, you use a different methodology. You can weave it, but usually they're not so long. Rashi does talk about spinning, and the Gemara in a second will also say the same thing. That we're talking about spun hair of the goat. It's longer than just the hair itself. Now it's spun out. But over here, Gemara says the Maichazi. What is this? Amar Rabbi Yochanan Shekein Ani, a poor person, Kolea. Shalosh nimin, he is braiding 3 hairs. V'taleb tzavar bito. Talk about the fact that maybe they were dyed, that they were colored, and they weave them together in order to make them decorative for his daughter. These are a type of adornment jewelry that is worn by a young poor girl. This is her necklace, her piece of jewelry. And since it's kalua, which is it's braided, that's enough to make it like arig. So this is only true by sack. It's only true by sack because this is the normal way to put it together. This is a common usage of it. And therefore it'll have a classification of arig, even though it's not arig. It'll be like it's woven, even though it's not actually woven. So here we have sack. It's not really our Gemara here, but the Mishnayot and Kelim discuss the different materials. And each of these materials have different standards in terms of size, in terms of how they're made, and when it'll be tamei, when it won't be tamei. The statement here is that sak, which is the material, notzash elizim, the hair of the goat, has something that's a little different than a rig, the weaving, or a beged, which usually is more chamur. A beged has the lowest threshold to be considered tamei in terms of size. But sak has this one aspect where it's more chamur, which is that this braided hairs are classified as being a beged or being able to be mekabel tuma, even though by a beged itself, by a woven item, it would not be the case. So now the Gemara is going to speak about this whole idea of sack and how we know additional items that are included. Tanu Rabbanan, sack. Enli ala sack. I only have a sackcloth. If you remember, we mentioned the sackcloth before with regards to the ro'in, with regards to the shepherds, that they wore them. At the time I described it like a poncho. They wore it to protect themselves from the rain. So now I only have the sack referring to the common usage of it, which was that it was worn as sackcloth. Minayin lerabot et ha-kilkali v'tachevet. How do I know to include these additional items? The kilkali, Rashi calls it a horse cover. Others call it a breast strap. V'et ha-chevek, which is a saddle band or a girth. They're just bands or strips that go around the horse in order to hold the saddle in place, or to hold the load in place, or to stop the load from moving forward or backwards. They're made out of this same material. They're made out of notzash shel izim. How do I know that these are also included in tumah? Tamalomar osak. Remember we had like before, o beged. O was a ribuy to beged. So sort of here, the o to the sack is also a ribuy. Yechol shani b'rabet ha-chavalim v'et ha-meshichot. I would think that you would also include ropes and strings. Strings in meshichot are measuring strings. Tamlomer sack. Then we won't include those items because it has to be domeh l'sak. What are the characteristics of a sack? Masak tavui ve'arig. Just like a sack is spun and woven. Af kol tavui ve'arig. So too, anything that is spun and woven will qualify to be tamei like a sack. These ropes, these strings, even though they're called braided, they are twisted together. They are lacking on the spun side, and therefore they will not qualify over here. As Rashi points out, velo dami lo kolea shalosh nimin. Why isn't this the same as the decorative item that is made by the ani? Because he said, velo hatam tavui, vehu, vizehi arigato. Over there, it's spun. And number two is, it's also, that's the normal way to do the weaving of such an item. And it's actually zim here, we're using a large quantity for the ropes or the strings. That's not really weaving. Number one, and number two is, it seems like it wasn't spun either. So because of that, it doesn't qualify to be under the category of sack. That is one piece. Now the Gemara says, "Varehu omer b'met." By tumat amet in Parshat Chukat, it says, "V'chol kli or v'chol ma'asei zin." So instead of using the word sack, it says anything that is made from the goats. Obviously the same thing. One is talking about the material, and one is talking about the end product. The sack is the end product. Maseizim is what is made from that resource. So titchatu, then you have to be material them. The rabot, kilkali v'etachevet. That comes to include these items. Yochol sh'ani mirabet ha'chavalim v'etamishichot. I would think I would include these additional items, the ropes and the strings. V'dinu, timei b'sheretz v'timei b'meit. We know by sheretz, those were the first psukim we looked at, which was obasak. V'timei b'meit, which is the pasuk we just saw over here, v'chol ma'asei zim. Ma'akashi timei b'sheretz lo timei ela tavui varig. Just like by the sheretz, it was limited in what it was mitamei, only items that were domei l'sak, not chavalim v'mishichot, because they lacked tavui varig. Af kashi v'timei b'meit, so to by tamei meit, lo timei ela tavui v'arig. It should only be mitamei, something that is spun and woven. Mar says, hey, what type of limud is this? Im heikil b'tamei sheretz, shihi kala. Because you're talking about tumat sheretz, which is a lower form of tumah. It's what we call tumat erev. You're only tamei for a single day, go to the mikveh the next day, and at sunset, you're tahor. Tumat ameit extends over 7 days. It's much more chamur tumah. So just because I have, by tumat sheretz, a limitation in what is tamei, why should I be nekel b'tumat ameit, shihi chamura? Why should I extrapolate from that to tumat ameit to suggest that tumat ameit should be exactly the same? It's not a logical argument. Talmud lomar, beged ve'or, beged ve'or. L'gzeir shava. There's a gzeir shava between these two words, a beged and or. Nemar, beged ve'or b'sheretz, v'negemar, beged ve'or b'meit. By tumat sheretz, it talks about beged, it talks about or, it talks about cloth, it talks about clothing, and or, skins, leather. And by tumat ameit, it says the same thing. Ma, beged ve'or, hamur b'sheretz, lo timel el tatavui v'arig. Just like by tumat sheretz, it only includes items that are tavoy v'arig, spun and woven. Av beged ba'or amur b'meit, lo timel tavoy v'arig. So too by tumat meit, it only includes these items that are spun and woven. Gemara says, ma beged ba'or amur b'meit, timei kol ma'asei zim. Av beged ba'or amur b'sheretz, timei kol ma'asei zim. So if we can say that, if you have beged ba'or, it's a two-way street. So let's say, just like by tumat meit, it says, kol ma'asei zim, anything made from goat's hair. Let's say, just like by tumata made, it included everything. So too, by tumata sheretz, it'll include everything. Enli ela davar ba minizim. That's only things that come from goats. Minayin rabot davar ba mizanav asus umizanav hapara. How do I know that I can get hair from other places? I can get hair from the tail of a cow and the tail of a horse. So how do I know that those have the same din as notza shelizim, the hair of the goat? Talmud Omar, Osak, from the riboy of Osak. He says, wait a minute. Ha, fikte, you already used that, the kilkuli v'chevek. You already used that to teach you that you include these additional items, these bands that go around the horse. He says, ani milim ikame delete gzer shava. Wait, that was before we had the gzer shava. Ha, shadat gzer shava. Now we have the gzer shava. Yautile. It becomes extraneous, the Osak. Because from the gzer shava of beged and or, now I learned, just like by the tumat ameit, it says that anything, chol ma'asei zim, is included, including a kilkuli and a chevek. So too, by tumat sheretz, I'll have that information from tumat ameit. Now that I have that information, osak is extraneous. If it's extraneous, I can use it for an additional limud. That additional limud means I'm merabe something else. What's the something else that I'm merabe? That's the horse's tail hair and the cow's tail hair that'll have the same din as the goat's hair. Now, it will still remain that limitation of sak, which is that only something that is tavui barig, only something that is spun and woven, that will remain in place. And because of the gzeres shava, we'll apply that to tumat ameit as well. Now, the Gemara says, v'en le'ele b'sheretz, v'tumat ameit minayin. How do I know by tumat ameit that also applies the fact that we have this riboy, this osak, which tells me that horse's hair and the cow's hair is included under the term sak, because I have osak, it's written by sheretz. How do I bring that over to tumat ameit? V'dinu. We do. Okay, so the Gemara says, first, is there a logical argument? Dinu. Timei b'meit, v'timei b'sheretz. Ma, kishi timei b'sheretz, asad davar abba mizanav asus, mizanav aparak, maseizim. Here, the Gemara is using the logic in the opposite way. Here, I am more expansive. Before, I said, by tumat sheretz, I'm more limited. And then I wanted to extrapolate that to tumat ameit. That defies logic. Because I'm going to something that's more chamur, and I want to be mitzamtzeim, I want to limit it. But if the other way around, Here, we're more expansive by Tumat Sheretz. I'm including additional items. Then certainly I should include those items by Tumat Amet. And that's what the Gemara's argument is now. Which is, Ketimei B'Sheretz, it said, Devar Bana, Ba, Mizanav Asus, Mizanav Aparakim Aseizim, Av, Ketimei B'Met, Asad Devar Ba, Mizanav Asus, Mizanav Aparakim Aseizim. Where it says, hey, can you really learn that? Im hirbe betumat erev shehi miruba, hirbe betumat shiva shehi mu'etet. So here the Gemara asks a question, which is, sheretz has a tzad chumrah to it. Tumat sheretz is not always l'kula when you look at it in relationship to tumat amet. And that is because tumat erev shehi miruba. Tumat erev is, the simplest way to read it is, it's more common. It just happens more often. That's the simplest way to read it. The way Rashi reads it now is, there are more things that generate Tumat Erev than generate Tumat Amet. That's another way to say it. That makes it that you can't necessarily make a logical argument and say that if I know something about Tumat Sheretz, I will then know it for sure by Tumat Amet. If you're using logic, this is something that would undermine the logical argument. So one is, it's the most common type of Tumah. The other one is, that is something that's found amongst many items. And the last possibility is that by Tumat Amet, there is only one item that generates Tumat Amet, and that's Amet. Other things do generate Tumat Erev. So whatever the comparison is, there is something about Tumat Sheretz that makes it that you can't necessarily learn or extrapolate things from Tumat Sheretz to Tumat Amet. Tamalomar, Beged Ve'or. Beged Ve'or, L'Gzeir Shava. So the Breita does this again. This is a very common way for a Breita to present material. It's presents a logical argument which it undermines, and then says we need the Gzeir Shava. And then it'll go back and do the same thing in the opposite direction and say in the end we need the Gzeir Shava for both directions. Never begiv or b'sheretz, never begiv or b'mate. Ma begiv or amur b'sheretz, asad devar abba mizanav sus, umizanav parakim maseizim. So just like by the osak that we find by sheretz, it comes to include the hair of the tail of the cow, the tail of the horse. Af beged ba'or amur b'meit. So too, we're going to extrapolate that now through the Gzeir Shava to Tumat Amet. Asad davar ba mizanav asus, mizanav aparak, maseizim. Gemara says, umufne. It has to be here that the Gzeir Shava is mufne. Quickly, a little background to this. The word mufne means that it's extraneous. It's unnecessary. And the reason for that is, Gzeir Shava, technically, is what we call Gzeirat HaKatuv. It is something that is not necessarily a logical argument. For that reason, in most places, you need a misora, you need a tradition to be done a Gzeir Shava, in order to learn a Gzeir Shava. It takes two words here, or a word here and a word there, and says, we're going to connect between them. Well, how do you know to connect these words and not words in another place? That's something you get through misora. Other arguments, for instance, in the Shlosh Esrei Midot of Rabbi Shmuel, those are logical arguments. Logical arguments can be made by anybody, because you could test the logic. The logic works fine. If it doesn't work, then it doesn't work. Gzeir Shava is seen to supersede that because it doesn't require logic. It's simply a matching of words. So that you need a Mesorah for. But the Gemara has an argument in the Gemara Nida is, how true is that? How true is it by Gzeir Shava do we say that logic doesn't matter? So there is a machloka between Rabbi Shmuel and the Chachamim there. And that is that if you simply have a Gzeir Shava where neither of the words are extraneous, everybody agrees that it also has to fit logically. That's the equivalent of a logical argument. And if it doesn't fit the logic, then that Gzeir Shava will fall away. There is machloket there, which is how many of the words in the Gzeir Shava have to be what's called mufne, extraneous. What's called mufne mitzad echad, extraneous on one side, or mufne mishnei tzadim, which is extraneous on both sides. Here, the Gemara brings down that argument. The Gemara is saying that the logic will not work. Bright already presented us that. That you can't extrapolate from mate to sheretz or sheretz to mate because each side has a chumrah. So logic will not work here. That means that the Gzeir Shava has to be mufne, which means that it has to be at least one of the words has to be extraneous or not necessary in order to be done the Gzeir Shava to overcome the logical inconsistency. Question is, how many do you need it to be both extraneous on the side of sheretz and mate, or only on one of them would suffice? And that's what the Gemara says over here. It has to be mufne, because otherwise the Gzeir Shava wouldn't work. So what you have here is Gzeir Shava is a Gzeir HaKatuv, but only in a certain framework, only in a way that the words were used for the Gzeir Shava were extraneous, then it can defy logic. But if it's just a regular Gzeir Shava, it falls into all the category of all the other items, which is that it has to fit to the logical requirements of any other of the limudim. The more unnecessary the words were in their context, they can be removed from their context and used for the Gzeir Shava. Now Rashi says something very interesting over here. He says, why? exactly your question, why does that work? So Rashi says that when the words are extraneous, then we look at them in context, they are necessary. So now we are done the Gzeirah Shavah. The Gzeirah Shavah makes it as if I've written the information that's found on the other end of the Gzeirah Shavah in the context where it's found. It's as if I say, that's a good word, transported the information from the other side, or basically, it's a reference, it's a cross-reference. And that cross-reference makes it as if I wrote here exactly what's written in the other location. And that's why it's able to overcome the logical inconsistency. Because it's no longer dependent on logic, it's as if it's written in the context in which it is found. Mar says, I have to have it here that it is mufne. Divlav mufne ikad mifrach. So what's interesting here is that the Gemara does not suffice with the argument of the Braita. David already said, you know, really, is that really a Chumrah, that it happens more frequently, more often? Here, the Gemara raises a different Chumrah in Sheretz, which is that Ki Adasha. Correct. That Rashi says. I mean, Rashi asks your question. The Gemara could have brought it earlier. The Gemara waited for the Braita to finish, and then raises the issue. Which is that the problem is that Sheretz has another Chumrah, which is that the Shi'ur, the minimum requirement for a Sheretz, is smaller than that of a mate. A mate, the minimum threshold is a Kazayit, an olive size. Whereas by a Sheretz, it's Ki'adasha, the size of a lentil, which is smaller. And that's clearly a Chumrah by Sheretz. So now I have a Chumrah by Sheretz, that means I have a Chumrah by Tumat Mate, because it's Tumat Shiva, 7 days. I have a Chumrah by Sheretz, which is that it's Ki'adasha. That means from a logical standpoint, I cannot learn from one to the other. So I need this mufne. So Gemara asks, la'ai afnuye mufne. So the word la'ai, it's an interesting word. It's not clear where it came from. It might be Greek in nature. That's what the Aruch says. Rashi says it means be'emet. From where? Tell me truthfully, where is it that it's extraneous, the words here? So Gemara says, mechte. Sheretz itkash l'shichvat zera. There is a juxtaposition between sheretz and shichvat zera. Both are tumat erev. Dichtiv, it says, ish asher titzei menu shichvat zera. V'samich lein. And juxtapose that, it says, Ish asher yiga b'chol sheretz. Uchtim be b'shechvat zera. And by shechvat zera, it says, b'chol begin b'chol or, asher yelav shechvat zera. So we know already that begin and or are within the category of tumat shechvat zera. So begin v'or, dichtiv rachmana b'sheretz, lomali. I don't need the words to repeat it by begin v'or, by sheretz. I already know that sheretz and shechvat zera have commonality between them because of their juxtaposition. So just like by the seminal omission, it already tells us that there's tumah by begin v'or. So that should be obvious by Sheretz, it also applies to Begin V'or. The fact that I wrote the words Begin V'or by my Sheretz now become extraneous, unnecessary. So Lomali, what do I need them for? Shmanim Ya, Lafnuye. That means that they are available now to don this Gezerah Shavah. Where it says, Vakate Mufne Mitzad Echadu. That's good, according to the one who says that when you have it be extraneous on one side, now by Sheretz, not by Mate, that's enough. We learn it, and we don't then ask or retort with logical arguments. But, even when you have extraneous on one side, we still learn the Gzeirah Shavah, but if there's a logical inconsistency, we do not learn it. What are you going to say here? No problem, by mate, it's also extraneous, unnecessary. Why? Guess what? Tumata mate was also juxtaposed to shechvat zera. Dichtiv, because it says, v'nogea v'chol tamei nefesh, o ish asher teitzei menu shechvat zera. Uchtiv v'shechvat zera, and we just saw before, by the seminal mission, it says, v'chol beged v'chol or, beged v'or, dichtiv v'rachmana b'mate lamali, shma mino, laf nuye. So now I have extraneous beged v'or, both by tumata mate and by tumata sheretz, that opens it up for a gzeirah shavah that can be learned, without any questions about the logic of the argument. Because of that, we're able to learn this. Begin Ba'or teaches us the exchange of information between Sheretz and Tumat HaMeit. That is, first of all, by Tumat HaMeit, it teaches us that anything that is made from the Izim, from goat's hair, is included. That's what we learn after Tumat HaMeit. Tumat HaSheretz will teach us two other items. One is not only goat's hair, but even other additional items, because we have O Sak. O is a reboy. It will also teach us the limitation of Sak, which is Sak is Tavoy, Varig, that has to be spun and woven, so do we have those limitations. Tumat HaMeit will provide us the broad swath, which is anything made from Izim. Then Sheretz will provide for us the additional reboy of hairs outside of the A's, as well as the limitation to what items are included. And that will all learn out from the Gzeirah Shavah. Now the Gemara moves into Klei Midyan. We've been bouncing around a little bit with Klei Midyan. We keep bringing proofs from the Klei Midyan, which is the battle with Midyan, and the booty that they bring back, and the items that are Tameh. So now the Gemara continues with that. There is, towards the end of that parsha, it says, V'nakreiv et korban Hashem. It's interesting. At the end of all that transpires, after all the booty's brought back, they split it up, they divide it, they pay the taxes on the booty. Then there's this event, or a little incident, where the officers, the generals and the officers approach Moshe, and say, we want to bring a korban to Hashem. Because nobody died in the battle. We're thankful to Hashem, because nobody died in the battle. So they basically say, V'nakreiv et korban Hashem. Korban Hashem over here means, not kapara, but toda. Thank you. Ish asher matza, kli zav. Somebody found utensils of gold, etz adav etz amid, bracelets, chains, tabat, rings, agil, earrings, v'chumaz, and tablets. So we want to give all of these as donations. Here the word korban used as a donation, not as a korban on the mizbeach, right, tetruma, to Hashem. Amar Rav Elazar, then Rav Elazar comes to explain, what is this agil? The simple interpretation of agil from the word agul, circle, is an earring. But he says, no, this agil is zedfus shel dadim. This is something that is shaped like the breasts of a woman. Kumaz, zedfus shel beit arecha. The kumaz is something that's made for the private area of the woman below. So these are decorative jewelry for the woman that are used to attract the man, whether it was worn out in public, it was only used by women of ill repute. It's not clear here how they were used exactly, but they are not considered to be items that are positive in nature. So then, Amar Rav Yosef, Yihachu, Haina de Metargamina. Now I understand the translation. Remember again, Rav Yosef became ill, and he also loses his eyesight. And therefore, Rav Yosef is always quoted as the Bucky in Targum, because he was no longer able to learn Torah Shebichtav, because he couldn't learn it in Minachtav. So he became a Bucky in Targum with the translation. He says, now I understand the translation of this word as machuch, something that makes you happy, levity, laughter. Davar me dvili de gichuch. I mean, something that brings a person to a place of levity, a place here of leitzanut, Rashi says, which is the negative terminology. Amarle Rabba mi gufe dekra. You don't even have to go to the Targum. Shemami na kumaz. What is the word kumaz? It's an acronym for kan makom zima. This is the location of Zima. So here you have these items that are donated. Now, the Gemara continues and says, Vaiktsof Moshe apikudei achayo. Moshe gets angry at the officers. This actually happens earlier. This is not at the end, but much earlier on, when they bring back the booty as well as the captives. And amongst the captives, they bring back the women. And Moshe is upset about this. They just had this problem by Baal Peor and the Shittin that the Bnei Israel were mezaneh et benot Moav. So he says, oh my goodness, you're just starting this all over again. You're bringing back these women, and now we're going to end up in a bad place. Amar Rav Nachman, Amar Barvua, Amar Lan Moshe Yisrael. So he interposes a conversation that's not found in the text, but that is, Shema chazartem lekukuchem harishon. Maybe you've now sinned again like you did before. In the Pashtut of Pasuk, Moshe is afraid of the women being brought back, because, hain, these are the women that caused the problem before, how could you bring them back as captives now? So he's not talking about the fact that the officers or the men of the army had done anything wrong, he's just afraid that these women who were the cause of the problem, how could you bring them back and keep them alive? The way the Gemara poses in question is that Moshe is almost accusing them of, did you possibly sin with these women, like, beforehand? Lo, their response to him is, lo nifgad mimenu ish. Nobody died. So it's clear that there's no Aveira here, because God would not have kept everybody alive and had no casualties of the war had they sinned. Amalan in Ka'ain Kapara Lama. So again, the Gemara clearly takes this out of context. They're saying, well, then the officers are offering up a korban. And korban means kapara. It's clear from the context when they bring the korban, they bring it as a todah. They're saying a thank you. They want to thank Hashem because nobody died. The Gemara is taking it out of context. I mean, Doresh said korban here means kapara. Why are you bringing a kapara if nothing went wrong? Nobody sinned. Amrulo, im midei avera yatsanu, midei hirur lo yatsanu. Said, fine, nobody sinned in the physical sense, but that doesn't mean that nobody had improper thoughts over here. Miyad, v'nakrevet korban Hashem. And then they brought the kapara. Because of that, Moshe accepted it. So Tana de Be'er Yishmael, Mibnei Mahutz Ruchu Yisrael Shabbatodor Kapara. Why did they need Kapara? Again, reading the word Korban, not to be thank you, but rather as Kapara, as atonement. Shizanu Enehem Min Ha'erva. Because they got enjoyment, meaning that they followed their eyes. They looked at things that they shouldn't have looked at. What is it that they looked at? They were in the middle of battle. They were at war. What's going on here? So Amar Rav Sheshet, Mibnei Ma Mana Katub Tashirim Shibachutz Im Tashirim Shibifnim. In the list of items that we said before, we talked about different types of, we call them adornments, jewelry. Some of those jewelry are things that are worn on the outside. I translated them in loosely, the earrings, the rings, the bracelets. These are things that one wear on the outside. But they also mention tachshirim shebifnim, things that are considered to be private jewelry. Those are the agil and the kumaz, the way that Rabbi Lazar interpreted them. Those are things that are not worn out in public necessarily, but they are adornments of the woman, but private adornments of the woman. But the list puts them together and just lists them all in one shot. Why is that? To teach you. To teach you this din, we saw this back in the Gemara and Brachot as well, that the looking at a woman for simply the enjoyment and for, say, improper thoughts about this woman, it doesn't matter what you're looking at the woman. It doesn't matter if you're looking at the woman when she is naked. It doesn't matter if she's fully dressed. A person has to, I would say, in a number of ways, look at the woman in a proper context. That is, number one, that she is a person, and she's not an object of desire. That's number one. And number two is, this is improper. You're not supposed to look at a woman for that purpose. It's not the right thoughts that a person should have. That's not the type of thoughts that's going to bring a person to a good place. The Gemara here says, because of this quality drawn between the different jewelry, it teaches us that there's also not only the letter of the law, but there's the spirit of the law. The letter of the law is that a woman has to have certain areas of her body covered, and a person may not look at those areas. But there's also a spirit of the law, which is, it's not just looking at the improper places. It's the type of thoughts you have when you look at the woman. And one has to resist that temptation as well. Tosafot asks a very interesting question. He says, don't we have a parsha of Eshet Yifat Tawar? That's exactly the situation here. They go out to battle, they see a beautiful woman, and they're attracted to a beautiful woman. That the Gemara seems to be over here, negating that possibility. Because the way Moshe asked the question of the officers, and the way they respond, and they say, well, they might have looked, they might have seen something they desired. How come that's the case? Tell us what this answer is, even more interesting, which it is. So it says, Yesh Lomar Mikom Makom Shayach Ba Isur. Tosfot says, Eshet Yifat Tawar is not just a simple thing. There's Isser involved in it. It's not that everything is okay and hunky-dory. And that's what David just raised here, that Rashi says, quotes Chazal on the spot, that Lo Dibra Torah Lo Keneged Yitzhara. The Torah knows the condition of an individual at war. A person who's a conqueror, a person who is in that position, loses somewhat of a control over their emotions and their desires. And therefore the Torah was not willing to restrict this issue because they knew that it was too hard. But that doesn't mean that it's a carte blanche to do whatever you want. Here Tosfot clearly says that there's still an Isser involved based on what we just saw in the Gemara. Okay, now we move on to the next Mishnah. The next Mishnah is interesting. Because this begins the second half of the parak. We began the parak with, Bameisha Eino Yatza. That what if she cannot go out with? And then the other part is what she can go out with. So we've done so far all the Mishnayot about what you may not wear. Now we're at the point where we are, what you can wear. So Yatza Isha, Bechutei Se'ar. Woman may go out with the strings of hair, Ben Mishala, whether it's her own hair, Ben Mishal Chaverta, whether it's her friend's hair, Ben Bishal Beima, or whether it is in animal's hair. She can use them, as Rashi says over here, that they shukolat behen sarah. They use them to braid or tie up their hair. You're allowed to use any of these items and to go out with these items. Ube totefet. We already discussed this totefet, which was the frontlet. Ube saritim, the garlands. Remember that totefet was something that went across the forehead from ear to ear. And then the garlands, the saritim, were things that hung down towards the cheeks from the side. But that's only bizman shein tefurin. If you remember when the beginning, the first Mishnah said you may not go out with these because they were not attached to her hair covering. But over here, if they are attached to the svacha, they're attached to her hair covering, there we don't have a problem because in order to remove them, she'll have to remove her hair covering, which will not happen. So she will not take them off anymore. She will not show them to her friends or should there have been because you're unable to do it. Bi kabul ubepeyan nachrit lechatzir. She may go out with a kabul or peyan nachrit into the chatzir. Peyan nachrit being a wig. And a kabul we mentioned earlier, which is this hairnet. It's an external or type of hair covering that goes on top of the svacha that she can wear into the chatzer, implying that she may not wear that into the reshut harabim. Which of these chatzer modifies? It seems from here that it modifies both of these items, but not anything else that the Gemara is going to discuss. Now she may go out b'moch shibozna, with cotton in her ear, or b'moch shibsandala, or a cotton in her sandal, ubamoch shidkina linidata, as well as cotton for her menstruation, the equivalent of a tampon, bipilpel, she may go out with a peppercorn in her mouth, ubegalgal melach, which is like a globule of salt, b'chol davar shenitan l'toch pia, anything she puts in her mouth, As long as it wasn't put into her mouth on Shabbat itself, it was there prior to Shabbat. But if it falls out of her mouth, lo tachzir, she may not put it back. So in these items, Rashi says, "V'moch she'itkina l'nidata." This cotton that she prepares to plug her menstruation, Rashi says that to protect her from her clothing becoming soiled, that the blood doesn't come out and soil her clothing. Tosafot says that cannot be the case because it's called etzulei tinuf. We saw that already earlier by the Zav. You're not allowed to wear something that's simply to protect your clothing. You can wear things that are to protect you, and you can wear clothing. You cannot wear items that are simply to protect your clothing. The classic example that's given of that is, you may not wear a hat cover. A hat is worn to cover your head. If you wear a hat cover, the reason that you wear the hat cover is to protect the hat, not to protect you. As opposed to like a raincoat. A raincoat, yes, it protects your clothing, but it also protects you. It stops you from coming wet. So the argument by the hat cover is exactly this, that it's letzuleitino, if it's to protect the hat, not to protect you. So over here, Tosfot says that can't be the reason. So Tosfot says the reason you do this is that it should not fall on her leg. That the menstrual blood, not that it shouldn't dirty your clothing, and that it shouldn't come on her, herself. And that's why it has to be put in here. The second thing is, why is she allowed to go out with these items in her mouth? She's chewing on these items before Shabbat. Why is she now allowed to go out without worrying about them? So the Tosafot brings from the Rabbeinu Parat, Gzeira Mishom Shchikat Simanim. It's a problem of medicinal usage. Came into the Refuahu. Since it's for Refuah, she may not put it in on Shabbat. If she puts it in prior to Shabbat, then we no longer have that fear, because she's not doing it on Shabbat. The refuah was already put in place before Shabbat, and therefore it's fine. Tosafot then asks on that it cannot be the case, because we know, if you have a bandage on before Shabbat, and it comes off on Shabbat, you're allowed to replace it. You're allowed to put it back on, as long as it's there before Shabbat. That would indicate here, if you're chewing on these items, they fall out of your mouth, you should be able to replace them, put them back in your mouth. And therefore, Tosafot brings a second explanation. He says, V'chein yirali, ubuvad, shalot titein lechatchila. So we don't want you putting it in your mouth on Shabbat because it looks like you're trying to put it in to carry it. You want to move this item from one place to another. You can't carry it. So what do? You stick it in your mouth. Then you walk across. That's how you're going to move it. Because according to that reasoning, all the items, not just this pilpel and galgal melech, are modified by this. It's talking about every item there that you put in. The cotton in the ear. The cotton in her sandal would all have to be put in there before Shabbat. Because the same fear would be true. Which is that it would look like you need to carry the cotton from there here to there. So what do? You put it in your ear and you walk across. So we're not going to let you do that on Shabbat. If it's in there before Shabbat, fine. But if it's on Shabbat itself, it looks like you're trying to carry it. Tosafot then expands the modification that's made by this Mishnah onto the other items that are prior based on that reason. Then the Mishnah continues and says, Shein totevet v'shein shel zahav. Shein totevet is like a fake tooth. Shein shel zahav is a gold tooth. Rebbe matir v'chachamim osrim. We'll get to that later in the Gemara. The basic problem here is, since they are different than her teeth, people are going to laugh at her. And when they laugh at her, she's going to pull it out and carry it in Rishut HaRabim. The Gemara says, Vitzricha. We need, in the beginning of the Mishnah, the three items that are mentioned. We mentioned her hair, her friend's hair, and the horse's hair. Di'yashmina and di'da. If we only mention her hair, Mishum Dolo Mais. It's not so disgusting. It's her own hair. Yes, it's detached from her head now, but it's her own hair, and she's just using it to braid her hair. Aval Chavrata de Mais. To use her friend's hair, which is not so pleasant. Aim alone, maybe we'd say no. And because of that, she'll come to pull it out and carry it. If we mention just her friends there, the bat minau, at least that's coming from another human. So that's why we don't worry about it. La bar minau, a behema coming from an animal, then we'd say no way, aim alone. Sricha, therefore the Mishnah listed all of these items to teach you that all of these items are permissible to go out with. You pull them out. They'd be uncomfortable, or people make fun of it, and then you pull it out and show it. So the Gemara here says that all of these items are put in properly in a way that, again, they're not too tight, but they're tight enough where they're not going to fall out. We're not worried about them falling out, and we're not worrying about this woman pulling them out. Remember from the first mission on the Perek, she doesn't have to loosen them up to go to the mikveh, because they are tied tight, but not so tight that they create a chatzitza on her head. So there's no reason to believe that this woman will take these hairs out of her head. But that's not always true. Tano, we have a modification or qualification of this in a praito. Bavad, shalot teitzei yalda, b'shel zkena, uzkenei shel yalda. The truth is that it can't be anybody's hair. A young woman may not go out with an older woman's hair. And as zkena, an older woman may not go out with a young woman's hair. Where it says, wait a minute. Bishlama, zkena, b'shel yalda. I understand why an older woman would want to go out with a younger woman's hair. Because shevachula, that is something that improves things for her. She's now gray. She takes a younger woman's hair, which is still dark, still black. So then she's improved her situation by taking the younger woman's hair. Why would a young girl ever go out with an older woman's hair? Why do you have to even tell me that? It's just not something that happens. My gnayula, where it says, I did the Tana. It's just a literary style. Since the Tana mentions that it's a kena b'shel yalda, the older woman may not go out with a younger woman's hair, so too, a younger woman may not go out with an older woman's hair. That part is obvious. A younger woman won't go out with an older woman's hair because clearly people are going to make fun of her, or it doesn't look right, so she's definitely going to pull it out. But the bright has really come to teach you the opposite side, which is that the older woman may not go out with a younger woman's hair, because over there it's going to make her look better. And despite that fact, we say since it's different, she's going to end up pulling it out, or people are going to make fun of her, she's going to feel uncomfortable and take it out. Okay, now the Gemara continues, but Kabul pay an achid l'chatzer. Amarav. Kol she'asru chachamin l'tzeit pol l'rishut arvim, asru l'tzeit pol l'chatzer. Anything the chachamim are usher to go out to rishut arvim, you're asur to go out to the chatzer. Chutz, what's the only exception? Kabul u'pein achrit. That's what our Mishnah says. Our Mishnah just said, Kabul u'pein achrit, she's allowed to go out to the chatzer. So even though she may not go out into Rishut HaRabim with them, she may go out into the chatzer with them. But all the other items that were mentioned in Mishnayot, where you may not go out to Rishut HaRabim, you also may not go out into the chatzer. Now, according to most of the Farshim here, we're talking about a chatzer she'enu milrevet. We're not talking about a chatzer that has a eruv around it, where you can carry anything. Everybody agrees that these items are not mukse, so you could carry them around, and therefore she wore them in a chatzer ha'milrevet, it seems obvious that that's okay. But then here's a chatzer she'enu milrevet, where carrying is not allowed. So over there, it'll have the same status as Rishut HaRabim. The only exceptions are kabul u'pein achrit. That's what's mentioned in Mishnah. On the other hand, Rabbi Anani Bar Sason, again, usual, we don't see this Amora. Mishmei, the Rabbi Shmo, Rabbi Yossi Amar, Akol ke Kabul. Everything is like a Kabul. Anything that was restricted here because you're not allowed to go to Rishut HaRabim, then you're allowed to go into the Chatzer with it. This modification of Chatzer goes on everything we've mentioned until now. So tonight our Mishnah says, Bekabul, Be'er Nachrid, the Chatzer. It only mentions those two items. Bishlam al-Rav, Necha. Turns around, it makes a lot of sense. These two are the exception to the rule. That's why the Mishnah mentions them separately. The Rabbi Anani bar Sason, Kasha. What's he going to do with our Mishnah? And where it says, Rabbi Anani bar Sason, Mishmei Deman, Tamarle. He quoted in the name of somebody. Who was that? Mishmei de Rabbi Shmo, Rabbi Yossi. Shmo, Rabbi Yossi, Tanuhu Polig. Now, Tanuhu Polig is interesting. It's a term that's usually used for an Amora to explain that an Amora can argue with Tanayim. It's used by Rav a lot, Tanuhu Polig. Over here, Rabbi Shmo, Rabbi Yossi is a Tana. And so that's what it says, Tanuhu Polig. He has a different Tana that he subscribes to. So yes, you're right. The Mishnah doesn't support him, but he subscribes to Mishnah Rabbi Yossi, which supports his position. The Gemara says, "Varav." Now we have to explain Rav's position. Maishnohani. Why are these two the exception to the rule? So Amarula kidei shelo tigane al ba'ala, that she should not become disgusting to her baal, to her husband. So kidetanyo, we have a brayta, v'dava benidata. One who menstruates should be benidata. The word nidata, the shoresh, the etymology of the word is from the word nidui, which means to put in excommunication. A nida was separated in society. She was tmeya. According to many of the Rishonim, we discussed this when we did the Gemara nida, she's also considered to be a chola. She's considered to be also sick and therefore dangerous because it has a contagion to the sickness, not because of, like we think about contagiousness, but because through her ayin, through her looks, she can actually cause others to be sick. Therefore, she was put into nidui, she was put into separation. So zakenim arishonim, amru shalotif chol velotif kos, she may not put on eye makeup, she may not put on blush, velotit kashet bebidei tzivonim, she should not get dressed up, because she's an dava benidata. Since she is menstruating, she is benidata, she be nidui, separated out, she should not try to attract. She should not be beautiful. She should be, we know that nidui, excommunication, has the same din as a velut, which is that a person doesn't adorn themselves, they don't make themselves beautiful. Ad Shabbat Rabbi Akiva came and saved the women. Vili made, imkein atam igane al bala. If you do this, the husband, he's going to see his wife in this state, and imsa bala megasha. We're going to make it every time she is in her state of menstruation, she has to become ugly. She has to not present herself properly. The husband still interacts with her, if that's the case. He's going to come to be disgusted by his wife. Let me interpret that properly for you. That means that she remains tamei b'tumata nida until she goes to the mikveh. So even though she has passed her point of menstruating, she is still tamei nida until she goes to the mikveh. So that's the way Rabbi Akiva interprets it. But what do you see from this? You see from this that a woman is allowed to adorn herself, to dress up while she is a nida. And because of that, we saw this position of that shalotit gane bala, that there is an importance that a husband still be attracted to his wife, and therefore we have dispensations. Here, Rabbi Kiva darshins it even according to the Torah. There's a dispensation for a woman who's a nida, to still to dress up and adorn herself. And here, Rav interprets it with the gabei, the Mishnah, that the Chazal, even though they were oser, wearing jewelry and adorning yourself because of the fear of the violation of Shabbat, nevertheless, they gave dispensations for the Pe'ah Nachrit and for the Kabul, so that a woman should still be able to present herself to her husband in a beautiful manner. Now, who's the halacha like? Is the halacha like Rav or Rabbi Anani Bar Sason? So that those that paskin like Rav, Tosafot says that Venira, the halacha, Rabbi Anani. He says the halacha is like Rabbi Anani. Now there's numerous Rishonim, there are four or five opinions in the Rishonim about this. And in the halacha, it seems like we pass them like Rabbi Anani versus someone like the Tosfot says over here. He brings some interesting things here. He says, number one, B'shel Sofrim, this is a Din D'Rabbanan. If a machloka Din D'Rabbanan, we don't know how to pass them like, you go the hakel. The suffix derabban, and you go the hakel, that would follow Rabbi Anani versus someone. That means that women can wear anything they want in the chatzir. But then, he brings up something, David, that you asked yesterday, which was about the Reshut HaRabim. And he says this, you can look on the, as the Tosfot lines get wider, on the second line down, at the last word, it says, V'anu, she'ein lanu Reshut HaRabim gamur. We don't have a real Reshut HaRabim anymore. T'chol Reshut HaRabim shelanu, karmeliti. All of our Reshut HaRabims are really karmelite. They don't qualify to be a real Reshut HaRabim. Why? They're not 16 amot wide. And the 600,000 people don't pass by it. So again, that is something that is not clear, is necessary. The Rishonim, and already in time of the Gonim, they start to add this qualification in. But Tosfot says, we don't qualify for that. It's the equivalent of a chatzer that doesn't have a eruv on it. We don't have a Reshut HaRabim anymore. That means that everything has the same status as a chatzer she'enu me'urevet. And if we pass them like Rabbi Anani bar Sason, that means our women can wear their jewelry anywhere. They can wear it not only into the chatzer, they can wear it out into the Carmelite. They can wear it out into the public domain because there is no public domain. Then, he asks about that, wait a minute, you're equating a Carmelite to a Chatzer She'enu Me'urevet. And that's not true. The Gemara differentiates later on in the Masechta, when it comes to a fire, you're allowed to move items out of the house into a Chatzer She'enu Me'urevet, but you're not allowed to move items out into a Carmelite. Carmelite still has a higher status than a Chatzer She'enu Me'urevet. So maybe it's not a Reshut HaRabim, but it's also not a Chatzer She'enu Me'urevet. How can you equate the two? So this is even more interesting. The quotes from the Sefer Truma, Amenu Rabbeinu Baruch, Kevin Delid Hudu, since in their day they had a real Reshut HaRabim, midamu karmelite the chatzer she'enu me'urevet. They would not equate a chatzer she'enu me'urevet to a karmelite. Therefore, their karmelite was usher like Reshut HaRabim. But for us, she'en lan Reshut HaRabim klal, we don't have any Reshut HaRabim. Ein lachmir b'karmelite kol kach. You don't have to make a karmelite be so chamur. It'll be like a chatzer she'enu me'urevet, because that's the only thing we have. We don't have a Reshut HaRabim, so the karmelite's not going to have a status of Reshut HaRabim. Then the last thing is, by Rabbeinu Shimshon Matzah Katuv, b'shem Rabbeinu Sar Shalom, this is also quoted by the Ramah, the Halacha, which is that we have a numerous opinions here. Some of them pass them like Rav. Some of them have some limitations about not going out into a karmelite. Maybe you shouldn't go out to the karmelite. But, nevertheless, our women do wear jewelry out in public. Our women wear jewelry out in public. He ends off with, Sof tabar mruah kadmonim, demutarot, let's say ben, demutav yushol gogot, ayu mezidot. They're not going to listen to us anyway. So better not to tell them not to go out with this. So better that they are shol gogot than not mezidot. The Aruch HaShulchan actually, over here, expands that and says that our women today are different. The women in their day did not go out in public so often. So therefore, if they did go out in public and they were completely adorned, they saw their friends, they showed off their jewelry. That's not something that happens today. Women today are out in public all the time. And since they're out in public all the time and they wear jewelry on a regular basis, they don't go out and start showing their jewelry to other people. It's not a common occurrence. And therefore, maybe the gzeira is not as applicable to our women today. Now, I have a story for you, something that can only happen in Israel. It's one of those Israel stories. On my way over here today, the taxi driver said to me, can I ask you a question? Sure, you can ask me a question. He goes, I heard that women are not allowed to go out with a shetel this morning. I said, okay, that's interesting. I knew what he was talking about right away. Today's daf. So he said to me that he listens to, on Kol Berama, in the morning, they have on the radio, the Daf Yomi. And he hears the Daf Yomi every morning on the radio. I said, how long is it? He goes, it's a half an hour. So that's pretty good. He gets it done in a half an hour. I can't do that. But I go and he managed to get in some extra stuff. He talked about wins. You know, it's in the today's daf, but how do you get into the extra daf? Yeah, he goes, he managed to stick it in. But I want to understand it. So he asked me, he said that you're not allowed to wear a wig. He was very shaken up by this, that how is it that women are not allowed to wear a pe'en achri, not allowed to wear wigs? It happens to be that our Gemara is the pivotal point in the sugya. And that is because the Shilte Giborim, which is found on the Rif here, so today is Daf Samach Dalet, back in the Dapei Arif, if you look, Daf Chav Tet, in the Dapei Arif, the Shilte Giborim, writes, Yireh Mizeh, he says from this, Bavi Raya, V'smach v'nashim hayotzot b'kisui se'arot. I want to bring a proof to the women who go out with wigs that it is permissible. She'ein nosu'ot, when they are married. Aval b'makom liat saran nosot sarot chavruteyen shekorim kreino b'laz. Me'ahi d'shaninu b'perek b'meh isha yotza dach samach talit. Aradaf. I can prove it to you. How can I prove it to you? Because over here it says she'isha yotza b'pe'an achrit b'shabbat. A woman is allowed to go out with a sheitel on Shabbat. U'pershu amirfashim ki pe'an achrit hi migbat yidbeku bo se'ar. It's a hat that has hair stuck on it. It has nice hair and a lot of it. V'tasim oto aisha al rosha kedei shetitkashe b'se'ar. And that is her adornment that she wears. And how do I know we're talking about a married woman here in our daf? Gemara already said this. How do we know we're talking about a married woman? Because it says, Shlo titkane al ba'ala. The whole reason she's allowed to wear a pe'en achrit is that she not be disgusting for her husband. So I can prove to you she's married. We're talking about a married woman who's going out with a pe'en achrit. She's going out with a wig. Talking about a woman is married. But the reason that Rav says it's okay is Mishum to titkane al ba'ala. Hare b'nusu'a mairi. This is whatever he's describing here, but in their time, this braided hair that they wore, there was a, hey, the cranial, very good. It comes from the word cranial, cranium. Umash malahedja, shmutarot benot Israeli tit kashet behen. Says it's mutar legamre to wear a wig. The se'ar b'ishai erva. We have a principle that woman's hair is an erva. The kamar lohavi ela b'sera davuk le b'sara mamash. That's only true with hair that is attached to her head. V'nira gam b'sara ima se'ar. And her scalp is also apparent with the hair. V'se'ar mechaseh se'ara. There is no problem rosh. Like our Gemara says, doesn't matter if it's her hair that's in the wig, whether it's her friend's hair. But here you have it, that the Shilte B'Giborim brings down, that it's clear that a pe'an achrit is no problem at all. And he brings other proofs, he speaks about it a little more extensively over there. Now, what's the other side? In that, he asked me about it. I said there are differences of opinions here. The other side actually comes from Rashi on our sugya. Rashi on our sugya says, why does she wear a pe'an achrit over here? Why does she wear a sheitel? Rashi says over here, the reason that she wears a pe'an achrit is pliat se'ar, plusha, v'tzovar ta'al sarah. Piles it up on her head, in pliata shitireh balat se'ar. So she looks like she has more hair. Why is she putting it on her head to get, look, it could look like more hair? That's one thing. The second thing is, the pe'an achrit here is only mutar in the chatzer. You have to know that with regards to covering of hair, there are actually different gradations halachically about when a woman needs to cover her hair. Within her house, within the chatzer, and then with the Rishut HaRabim. The most restrictive area is the Rishut HaRabim. A woman has to cover her hair entirely when she goes out to the Rishut HaRabim. Within the chatzer, where there are less people, and it's not a public thoroughfare, woman may not have to cover it at all, or maybe only has to cover it partially. In her house, maybe not at all. Again, there is the Bat Chimchi, where the Gemara says that the walls of her house never saw her hair, that there's value to covering her hair. Guests come over, people come over, does that change the status? These are all halachic issues that are not relevant to us right now, but I'm just telling you that there is a difference in status. That's another thing. So based on that, there are those that want to suggest over here, number one, the halacha of pe'an achrit that's brought here is only b'chatzer. It's only in an area where a woman doesn't really have to cover her hair. It's a place where she has to either cover it partially or not at all, and the reason pe'an achrit works over here is because she doesn't have to cover her hair. But in Ochanami, b'shut harabim, the Gemara does not permit her to go out with the pe'an achrit b'shut harabim. No, but his argument is that it's not considered a hair covering. That's exactly his argument. His argument is that a wig does not work as a hair covering. It's only allowed in the chatzir because she really doesn't have to cover her hair there. Shut harabim, because she has to cover her hair, it doesn't work. You can't take it out there. Number two is Rashi. Rashi says that the hair was used to make her look thicker. So the claim is that it was used to stuff a hat. It was to make the hat look full. So they put it inside of another hat to make it look like she had a hair that filled out the hat. Why not stuff it with something else? Because sometimes the hat moves and stuff, and then you have cotton hanging out. It doesn't look good. So she stuffed it with hair in order to make it look good. The difficulty with this explanation, and with these explanations, is number one, the Gemara is clear about why she can't weigh a pe'an achrit into Rishut HaRabim. The answer is because of Hilchot Shabbat. Nothing to do with Hilchot Tzniut. The reason she can't wear it to the Rishut Rabim is like any other piece of jewelry. She might take it off. They laugh at her. She might want to show it to others. She's going to take it off and carry it to Rishut Rabim. It's a din in Halacha Shabbat. It's not a din in Halacha Tzniut. Restriction here is not because it's not considered covering her hair and then it's a masui. Carrying it to Rishut Rabim. That's clearly not the reason for it over here. That's a good proof, right? That the fact that she might take it off from Rishut Rabim shows you that otherwise her hair is covered. I mean, that there's another covering on her hair. It's interesting. So because of that, the halacha is, and this is the difference in opinions, this is what I answered the taxi driver today, that there are different minagim. The Magen Avraham, paskins like the Shulta Giborim over here, and therefore Bnei Ashkenaz in general have the minog, that their women do go out with peyanach wig, with wigs, and consider it to be that the hair is covered. Bnei Sfarad, many of the Sfaradim, and I think the Vajravad Yosef also paskins this way, that they may not use a peyanach wig. The peyanach wig does not qualify as hair covering. For most adult of Farad, their women do not cover their hair with peyanach wig. I think they have adopted it, because it's so common amongst the Ashkenazim. I think that many of the Sfaradim also have that minhag. There's also the minhag Hasidim, which follows this approach, that basically the hair was used to stuff a hat. And therefore, they not only wear a peyer nochrit, but they wear a hat on top of the peyer nochrit. And that the wig is used to hold up the hat, to put a hat on top. This midoraita, she may not have to cover her full head, how much she has to cover midoraita versus dat yudit. So what they do is they wear the peyer nochrit with a hat on top of it, to indicate that it is a peyer nochrit, and also to qualify based on this understanding. Again, something that could only happen in Israel. I was able to tell the taxi driver this. Just want to finish up to the two dots here, quickly. Anywhere where we say something's a sur, because of what my people might think you're doing, it's not only a sur in public, it's a sur even in the private chambers. It's not. What about in our Mishnayot of here? You can't go out with a bell, even though it's plugged. We said before the problem with that is that it looks like you're taking him out to the shuk. You're taking him out to sell him. V'tani yidoch. But we have another bright that says, pokek la zug b'tzavara, umitayel ba b'chatzir. That you can plug the bell and you can go out in the chatzir. Wait a minute. How come you can go out into the chatzir if that's something that you're not allowed to go out into public with? Mar says, tanahi, that is a machloket tanaim. Whether marat ayin has application in the private domain is a machloket tanaim. It says, shotchan b'chama. Person comes back and he walked through a river and his clothes are drenched. Is he allowed to put them out in the sun to dry? So here it says, Shotchan b'chama, you can put them out in the sun to dry, v'lo k'negadam, as long as the people can't see it. You're allowed to hang it out on the clothesline as long as people can't see, so they don't think you wandered on Shabbat. Rabbi Eliezer, or Rabbi Lazar, or Rabbi Shimon Ostrim, they say no, even though the people can't see it, it's a problem of Marat Ayin. Tosafot over here says, Yesh mefreshim dein halacha k'rav. The law is not like Rav because he brings a proof from a Gemara in Chulim. Says, Miu ein ze raya. Chatzer mutar af aroyelto omer lo nakir chatzer ilhu tzarich. Tosfot over here makes one qualification, and the Tosfot back on Samach Bet, and when Aleph does the same thing, makes another qualification over here, that this principle of Rav is not all-encompassing. Not every time do we say Marat Ayin, do we say that it means it applies across the board. That no matter what, Marat Ayin, and then you can't do anything. Marat Ayin is only true where the way you're doing it now is equal to the exact way if you did it in Rishut Rabim, it would have the same suspicions. One of the exceptions, he says, if when you do it in the private domain, if there's another possibility about why you're doing it there, in public, that wouldn't exist. But in the private domain, it would exist. There might be more than one reason why you're doing it. That would not qualify as Marat Ayin. The other thing is that if you were to do this in Rishut Rabim, it would not be Marat Ayin, meaning that nobody could see it in the Rishut Rabim as well. Then to do it in the chatzer also would not be problematic. Even though you're not allowed to do it in Rishut Rabim, because whatever the halacha is, but in the chatzer you could do it because you could replicate what you're doing in the chatzer in the Rishut Rabim, and it wouldn't be Marat Ayin there. So Tosfot starts to narrow down the scope of what Rav says about Marat Ayin, not to say that it's all encompassing. Every time we have Marat Ayin, it's all included. But there is some sort of narrowingness of that statement. Okay, we'll stop over here.